Yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent. That ought to set me straight.
Welcome to episode 63 of Commander's Horn Podcast. This is going to be a great episode. We are live with the Commandos here on a Saturday as Challenger approaches. We're talking about new cards, the recent dev stream, and a hotbed of discussion all about RNG. All that, and a little bit about the Challenger hosts on this episode of Commander's Horn. All right, folks, welcome back to the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the chat. Thanks for joining us live here with another Commandos Roundtable. We are live with Back to Kill, Thrilling, A-minus, and Gulox 2. The Thrilling and A-minus making their second appearance on the podcast, their second Commandos Roundtable. And a hearty welcome to Back to Kill and Gulox. Back to Kill, introduce yourself. Let everybody know what your favorite Gwent card is. And let us know a little bit about you.
My name is Back to Kill. I'm a streamer as well. Content creator. My favorite card at this time is probably Gigny, since everyone is kind of disrespecting playing around it, and picking it up again is kind of great.
Yeah, it's a great when you can smell stuff like that works, like when you know you can get away with running weather and stuff, it's always good. But Gigny is a very special one, I think. Thrilling, no stranger to fire, I think, right now. Welcome back to the podcast. How are you, the Thrilling?
I'm doing well, thank you, McBeard.
And A-minus from the UK, the Thrilling, of course, from LA, A-minus from the UK. How are you? Welcome back to the podcast, my friend.
I'm good, thank you. Glad to be back. I'm excited for this episode.
Yeah, me too. And Gulox joining us for the first time on the podcast, joining us on the East Coast, just like me in North America. Gulox is a huge fan of Skellige and also streams from time to time. Is that correct?
Yeah, I try to at least. I try to do it regularly during the week, every once in a while on the weekends. So yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I do have my purple on today for Skellige, of course.
Yeah, we'll talk about the new Skellige cards. Well, and I think I always ask the new additions to the podcast. What's your favorite Gwent card, Gulox?
Artwork wise, I would have to say, if I'm thinking about premiums, my favorite premium is Fake Siri, actually. Yeah, I really enjoy the cards with that portray a lot of emotion, and I think that one does it very well.
I think you can find out a lot about somebody when you just ask them the "What's your favorite Gwent card?" Question, because you get people who are, you know, sometimes they pick a very competitive card, they pick a very fun card. Some people just talk about the art because Gwent is aesthetically pleasing, right? So we're talking about old cards, though, but there were a lot of new cards that were just revealed on the dev stream that passed on Wednesday. Am I right? You know, Thursday. It was yesterday, right? It was
yesterday. Friday.
No, it was just yesterday.
Friday. Just yesterday Friday. Being Friday. I don't know what day it is anymore, guys. I travel a lot. Okay, so yeah, today being Saturday. So nice little weekend edition of the podcast. But I wanted to open the floor up with a general discussion. So people, I'm sure, have been caught up with the new cards and have seen, you know, a lot of really, really cool stuff. I will say that this most recent card dump has some of the best design cards that I've seen in Gwent and really kind of pushed the limits as to how cool these cards can be, I think. But there is also new leaders shown that people are kind of unhappy with. The new leaders being Ada for Northern Realms and Whispering Hillock for Monsters. Both of these leaders feature spawn effects, which actually may end up being renamed, as on the dev stream they said that they maybe weren't so in love with the idea of using the word spawn, as it already means something in Gwent right now. And people also have this kind of connection to the discover mechanic in Hearthstone, and spawn being already in effect, kind of when you're describing cards really quickly, some people might miss that. So to quickly state, when something is spawned in the new world of Gwent, you get to see three options and you can pick one of them. So that's how that works. And the two new leaders have those effects, meaning that what those leaders will give you every game is random, which means that they are not dependable. And dependability is kind of what leaders are all about. So it's a pretty heated argument right now, or discussion, let's say. And I think that there's a lot of advocates for both sides. I'm very interested in all of your takes, as you all kind of come from different levels of play, different interests, different skill levels, and different maybe length of time you've been playing Gwent. I'll start from Back to Kill, and I'll go across the screen here. Back to Kill, how do you feel about the new leaders?
My first impression was that they can be playable at the top of the ladder, because this is usually my biggest concern. If I see a new card, is it playable? Is it consistent enough to be playable on top of the ladder, mm-hmm. on pro ladder and normal ladder? Can it be competitive? And if a card, let's say, is introduced, which has an RNG effect, has a spawn ability, and I'm just asking myself, can I play this on top of the ladder? And then there is the question, how wide is the pool of the spawn cards? And yeah, right with Ebba, I would say this is kind of niche, black corner where we are, because mm-hmm. the possibilities are really, really good. And I think those cards are mainly for the new game mode, like mm-hmm. they introduced. And I think if you compare the new spawn leaders with cards like Gaunter, they exist, but will they be played? I think in the end, it will always come down to the most competitive and the most consistent decks. And I think leaders like that will have a place in Gwent, but not at the top of the ladder, which is what usually the people are concerned about. Oh, we will see this card everywhere, and is this going to ruin the game or not?
Yeah, that's the big question. Is this going to ruin the game or not? I don't think it's going to ruin the game, but I think it's definitely maybe not what people were expecting when they saw the new leaders. The thrilling, did the new leaders meet your expectations, or did you take this a different way? Oh, yeah, this one's for the thrilling.
I don't know how I feel about the new leaders, to be honest. I think from a lore perspective, one of the reasons I love Gwent so much is the lore is just absolutely incredible. And I think from a lore perspective, they're not really who I would have chose to lead my factions. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of that aspect, and I feel sort of meh about them. Ada is kind of known in the lore as very childlike. And the Whispering Hillock just doesn't really evoke, like, a strong leader. I don't know. You want that power, like, when you see Aridin, you're like, oh, yeah, he's King of the Wild Hunt. You have Dagon. I think we're getting Detlaf. And just, like, these really strong sort of figures in the Witcher universe. I just don't really feel that from these new leaders.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a really fair point. I think it's a really fair point in that these are not really traditionally like not your kings and queens, right? These are different. I mean, Whispering Hillock is like a location. and Ada is
so true.
And Ada is like borderline even a human being at all. So it's like really interesting that these are the leaders. I think it's interesting kind of thematically. I think that you can make a case because we know that Whispering Hillock is the home for like the Mother of the Crones or what has remained of that. And Ada is Foltest's daughter, but it is very strange if you don't have that lore kind of anchor, I guess, when you're viewing these cards. A-, how do you feel about these new sort of RNG leaders?
So I'm probably in one of the minor categories, as I really like spawn as a mechanic. I really like Discover from Hearthstone and the way it works. I think it's better for the game. It makes it more fun. It gives situational decision making. But on leaders, where it's completely always available, I'm not so sure I like it on like that aspect, because I prefer it on normal cards rather than. I think leader should be a specific thing, so you build the deck around the leader. And the specific things that have come out, like the Northern Realms leader spawning curse units, I feel like that has some implications, especially because you can get them from other factions. So having double spies in Northern Realms with if it gets Udaric and stuff like that could be very problematic in terms of meta. And the monsters one I just don't really get. Like organic cards, yeah, but mm-hmm. what does it actually a leader should synergize with the deck, I feel, and I just don't feel like organic cards really synergize with most things in monsters.
I agree with that.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. I also think that all factions should have a leader like that can take control of like an archetype that faction's kind of defined for, but I think that there's a lot of generalized leaders as well. I think these spawn leaders might fall within that. Ada not so much, because it looks like she has a whole new deck built completely around her. But Whispering Hillock seems to be like you just would be able to play any sort of hybrid under that leader. Gulox, how did you feel when you saw the new leaders?
Actually, I don't mind them that much. I think they're fine. I think it certainly seems like, if not in this update, at some point, every faction is going to have at least one leader like this. So, I mean, we'll, obviously we have to wait to see how they interact with what they're spawning. But, I mean, honestly, I think they're probably geared a little bit more towards whatever sort of new game mode we're going to get. I assume that CDPR wants some sort of leader that perhaps is maybe more of a go-to for that game mode than the traditional ranked that we have. I mean, that's what it seems like to me. I don't know. And looking at the card reveals, you know, there's at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It looks like there's at least 7 more bronzes for monsters. I mean, I don't know if a number of them are going to be some sort of organic card for this leader to use. So there may be a wider selection of monster-based organics for the Whispering Hillock, for example.
So I think with these leaders, like the discussion is really about, I think everybody was like, I'm sure you could see, you can kind of see like a drop off. Like it's kind of like a pyramid of people where it's like, okay, so Spawn is coming to Gwent and there's going to be some more random elements within it, although it's going to be a mechanic that's going to be similar to Hearthstone's Discover, which was widely appreciated, I think, especially considering Hearthstone comes from a very, very RNG-heavy environment, whereas Discover was actually more controlled, and I think people were more embracing of that. And but I think here in Gwent, it's like, okay, well, that's going to be there. So the first tier of people are okay with that part. And then the second tier of people are, oh, okay, this whole card set seems to be kind of functioning around new sort of like tags for like new curse tags, new soldiers tags, new new beast tags, and now we're going to see kind of all these spawn mechanics and how they work out. So Gwent's going to be a little bit more varied in how we see it. And then there's another tier of people below that saying, I was on board with everything up until we saw the spawn leaders, and now the spawn leaders are giving me pause. And then the final tip are the people who think everything's going to be just fine. So I think I'm hovering in between the final two things, because when I did see the spawn leaders, I was, it's not what I expected, I think. It's just not really what I expected. Are they okay leaders, though? I think Ada's probably, arguably, could be too strong, I think, at a base 6 strength. But I think that Whispering Hillock could be generally okay. I'm worried about overprevalence of stuff like Adrenaline Rush and stuff like that. But I find it interesting, Whispering Monsters could have gotten more support for the Deathwish archetype with a Deathwish leader. Back to Kill, how do you feel about archetype-based leaders versus generalized leaders? Like, let's say, Unseen Elder versus like John Calvet, like that kind of comparison.
We had that, like in the beginning of Gwent, we had Guilds, who was completely general. Mm-hmm. You could just buff units, nothing too special. And then they thought, okay, maybe we should change it around. Maybe we should dictate it into a direction. And I think having specialized leaders would be kind of good, like Ebba, perfectly fine. They're introducing all this cursed Northern Realm stuff. And then they're adding a leader for that. It's perfectly fine. And then there's the complete opposite on the monster side, which I'm kind of disappointed in, that there's no clear defined line which they go for the leaders, for the new ones especially. Maybe they will add it, maybe they will completely edit them or change them, but right now I think they should go one line for all those new leaders, like make them fit and maybe close those gaps, especially for monsters. There's this Deathwish deck, which is not perfectly fine. They should completely supported with new cards, but they're introducing a new part. Maybe it will end up that we have two decks which are not too viable instead of one good deck.
Yeah, that's cool. I mostly agree with that as well. The thrilling, I have an interesting question. I might pose this to other people if they have like a really interesting answer for it. But if you had any sort of issue with the random, the kind of the spawn leaders right now as they appear, let's say all 5 factions got a leader that spawned a classification of cards, would you be more okay with it if 2 leaders were released for each faction, like side by side? So you had your random leader and then you had maybe like a more archetype defined general reliable leader at the same time. Would that make it a little bit easier to accept, do you think?
I don't necessarily have a problem with the RNG leaders, but I do think that there definitely should be, with like CDPR releasing so many new cards, I definitely think that specialized leaders will be more effective, I guess, in, I'm not like a top player, but in the top ranks, I think specialized will obviously be better than RNG. But as someone who likes to play this game for fun, I think that the RNG mechanic of the leaders will kind of introduce a little bit of variety. Mm-hmm. So I'm not super upset they released RNG leaders. And I kind of like the way that they're staggering them. So as long as maybe we know that we're going to get another specialized leaders, I actually don't know if they're going to release. Are they planning to release two leaders for each faction or just one?
Well, the only thing that makes me think that is that we've already seen two artworks for Nilfgaard leaders in Anna Henrietta and the Usurper. So I imagine that there's another set of leaders coming soon. That's really the only thing that I have to hang on. But it seems like if they have other leaders lined up, and I don't think it's going to be another year either until we see them.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, but I feel like if they released the RNG leaders along with the specialized leaders, would the RNG leaders really honestly see that much play? Is my question.
Well, you make a good point that as maybe a more casual player, like the thing about these leaders is every time you play this leader, it's going to be a different game. Like it's going to be, you don't know what you're going to get. And like, as far as reliability and consistency, that's not something that you want, because I like to know that, you know, Aridin can get me X every time I play Aridin or something like that. So at least I know if I'm behind by a certain amount, I know exactly where I need to look to source that value. With something like Whispering Hillock, it's not for sure. Like you could get all sorts of whiffs if you need like points. You could get Adrenaline Rush, you get Boulder, which wouldn't be enough. You get Mardro and there's no target for it. So, and like that, those could be all three of your choices. So that wouldn't be good if you needed it for value, but if you needed it for a specific reason like Boulder or Adrenaline Rush or Mardrum, you can't rely on it. So it seems like I personally wouldn't want to play it even if I was looking for a fun time. So that's my response to what you said there. But I do like the fun lover in me does want to have like varying experiences, which is like why I like cards like Caretaker and cards like that. You can get something different when you play them each time. Like Dijkstra is different every time you play it, but it's still like in the realm of like very competitive and okay. A-, my question to you is, because you've played Hearthstone as well, right, A-?
Yeah? Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, double.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you followed it, you know that there were a lot of competitive decks in Hearthstone that were very consistent, and they were good because they were consistent in a heavily kind of RNG universe. Do you think that with these new spawn mechanics added to Gwent, consistency will still always be the most competitive way to play Gwent?
Personally, yes, it will still be the best way. Consistency is just key, as you can actually plan your game strategy before you've played the game. But with adding the RNG in, you have that extra risk factor, but that also could make your deck better if it pays off in when played. But yeah, I think consistency still will trump RNG, just because you can plan your game plan, you're more likely to know what the other player's playing, so you can plan to keep certain cards for dealing with that. But if you have the RNG cards, then you could not really get the one that you needed in that certain situation, and then it kind of leaves you in a tough situation, especially in a card game like Gwent, where if you make like one bad decision, that could pretty much cost you the game. Like if you have to go two cards down when you could have just gone one card down, that could pretty much cost you a game.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think there's some cards that are probably going to be like seen. Like, I think if you wanted to make a competitive Nilfgaard Soldier deck, you probably would leave a silver slot open for the new Vreemd card, because at least you're getting an officer in your hand and a soldier from him every time. So I think that he walks the line there, probably. That is assuming that soldiers could even be competitive in the first place. But, you know, it could be. I think we're seeing a lot of additions and there's still more to see. Gulox, my question to you, just kind of as far as general questions are concerned, before we dive into the new cards very specifically, when you see these cards with spawn mechanics and you see these new kind of tags that are applied for cursed and soldiers and officers and items, the first thing you're going to do when this patch drops, are you going to go for kind of a crazy fun deck where you're trying to make use of all the new spawn cards, or are you going to try to attack more of a defined archetypal build like right away? Like, what are you going to right away?
Well, I mean, I've already got some ideas that I think I've sort of shared previously in relation to what I'm sort of going to look at, but I'm very interested in much more of like the the categorical archetypes than the RNG right off the bat. It will be fun to try out some of these. I mean, obviously, I'm waiting to see what the other leaders are in relation to what they're spawning. There may be some fun ideas to try out there. But I definitely want to see how the new... I mean, as we're getting more and more tags, I want to see how viable each of them really are. I mean, can I just... Is a item-heavy deck going to work? Is a, you know... I mean, there's just so many tags. I'm looking through the cards right here. You know, obviously, it seems like a lot of things are going to be cursed. So you're going to see a lot of cursed decks at some point. Mm-hmm. I'm very much assuming. But, yeah, I mean, I like the RNG, and I'm definitely going to try them out. But I think on a competitive sense, it's much more of going to be based around some sort of category. And it's probably going to be bears.
Yeah, man. The bear Skellige looks like it could be a real thing for sure. It's get ready for the craziest meta you'll ever see in Gwent. I think unless they do like regular card dumps of like this many cards, like you're gonna be going up against like absolutely anything at all. I think in those first couple of days, it'll be maybe the most exciting laddering we'll ever do, especially because it condenses the ladder and you already are gonna go up against some interesting stuff. Because when you're ranking up from like the lower ranks up there, you run into all sorts of stuff. But everybody's gonna try to get their hands off these new cards and try to just theorycraft from the very very start. But let's go through these cards. I think that this is one of the best parts about teaser season, kind of like where you can just kind of speculate before we see the whole set. It's hard to do that sometimes. But let's talk about the new cards that we saw just yesterday on Friday. We'll start off with the neutral cards. I'm going to go in order as they appear on the playgwent.com/en/card reveals, if English is your language of choice. So Portcullis is the neutral silver card that we'll start with. It's a neutral special silver card. It's a tactic. Spawn a bronze or silver unit from your opponent's starting deck and boost it by two. So it's kind of like Elzer's Double Cross grab bag kind of sort of. It's kind of just like sort of like you could just get potentially anything, but it's your opponent's starting deck. So unlike like Avalok the Sage, where it needs to be in the deck and not in the hand, you will, if you know what your opponent is running in a deck, potentially, you have a pretty good idea of what you're going to see. Vaktakil, how do you feel about this very RNG card?
Like you already said, it's kind of marching orders, Alza's Double Cross card. Mm. But the thing here is, if you pick it in your deck, then you kind of have to gamble on what your opponent is playing. If there are going to be dominant cards which have some really good impact on the game, then you might play this. But I just think it's a worse marching orders or as a double cross, because you can't plan ahead on what's going to be, and you're blocking a silver slot for that. So I don't think it's really good.
It's a fair assessment of it. I mean, you wouldn't run this competitively necessarily, but it's also similar in a way to Summoning Circle, where you're counting on your opponent having something specific that you can take advantage of. And at least with the spawn mechanic, you can go through like two bad choices and make the best choice. But it's weird. I think that some people might run it, maybe, depending on kind of what's out there in the meta. But I think generally it's probably not going to be very good. The next card up is Nivellen, the 10 strength silver neutral card. Move all units on a row to random rows. So seems like it'd be pretty strong in movement, Scoia'tael. The thrilling, what did you think about Nivellen?
Favorite new card that they announced yesterday. For sure. Wait, did they announce it yesterday or was it 2 days ago? I don't remember. So many new cards. Definitely really strong for movement, Scoia'tael, which is something I've been playing recently. I think it has awesome, first of all, awesome card art. Really cool backstory and lore. It's actually in The Last Wish, one of the short stories. But for movement, Scoia'tael, it's going to be really strong. You can play it with Skags. I've been trying to make Milena work on the ladder, which doesn't really work, honestly. But you could also play it. I actually don't know. If you play it on your side, does it move your opponent's unit as well? Units as well? Or is
all
it,
units
is it
on
like
a row,
a double
two
agent?
Random rows. All units on a row, two random rows. Yeah, he's not a double agent, is he? But you can pick the row,
no.
Right? You choose the
you
row.
So. Yeah, so it's essentially like it's like a second Skags.
Yeah,
I mean, if you use it with the BMCs or the Dolblefana Marksman, you can get extra pings off of those. You can boost them. Overall, it's just a really strong card to include in movement, Scoia'tael, for sure. Very happy about this one.
Yeah, it's what a lot of people are saying about this one, just being like a really, really strong Squirtle card. And a base strength of 10 for this effect seems pretty good. And I think he's just like superior to Skaggs in that you can kind of target and really make your marksman work one way or another. I think it's pretty good. And also, yeah, it's very interesting about the artwork. The artwork is amazing. It's actually older art. This isn't commissioned art, but this is fan art that was put right into a Gwent card. So, I mean, if I was an artist, I'd be pretty thrilled about it. Yeah, slight editing, and of course they rigged it for the premium artwork as well. So to have like an art, like if coming from, I'm not much of an artist, but I'm creative enough to know that if a company I really loved wanted to use something of my work and enhance it to that way of actually giving it a 3D like life infused into it, like I'm just really happy for the artist. I think it's really awesome that artist can get that kind of recognition. I should really get the name of that artist. Maybe check and help me out about this one, but it's really cool. I looked that up. Okay, let's talk about Trial of the Grasses. This is a neutral gold special card that was added, which has got a great little bit of Witcher lore in it, as the Trial of Grasses is what all Witchers must go through to become Witchers. Basically poison your body to mutate you and make you, you know, a badass monster hunter. Deal 10 damage to a unit, unless it's a Witcher, in which case it deals 0 damage to that unit. If it survives, boost it to 25 power. So it's interesting. I think this card is really well designed. A-, what do you think about Trial of the Grasses?
So when I first read it, I was like, why is the Witcher tag even there? Because surely with this card, you just run Quensign your Elven Mercs and then just hit it with this for like 22, 23. But yeah, I think it's a really good card. Like, you can just put it in most decks. We can also try out another variant of the Witcher sort of replay deck we had before, where you played Witchers round one and then put them back in your deck in Northern Realms. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's a really, really good card. I think it will definitely see play in some decks.
I think I'm not like I've had a lot of conversations about this card, but I think it's really interesting in that I imagine you don't have this as a dead card because it also deals 10 damage to any unit at all. So it could actually be used as like a life or death removal as well. Potentially, I think so.
You think you can play it on an enemy unit and then just kill it.
So just like if it's 10 damage or less, you just kill the unit. So like if you just had to remove something, you could use it for that. Otherwise, you have this really awesome option.
I feel like if you're in round three and that's like your only option to use it, I guess it has versatility in that sense. Yeah, like but then if you're running it as that is its main purpose, I guess. Why would you not just run Alza's Thunder?
Well, it's true. You wouldn't run it for your main purpose at all. But it's kind of like how when Succubus was like double agent at one point, and when she worked differently, where it's like, okay, well, if I don't have a target, I can just play her on my side of the board and get some value out of it. So it doesn't exist necessarily. So if you don't have a unit and you have it in your hand, it's not like bricked like a scorch, like you're scorching your own unit. At least you can use it offensively. But I think it's a really cool card, and I'm counting on some excellent deck builders to make a great use of this card. But speaking of deck building, and I'll be honest, Gulox, I kind of rigged this a little bit so you'd get a chance to hit this card, because I know you had a lot to say about Ciri Nova. If you have, it's a one strength gold unit, neutral, as all Ciri cards are. If you have exactly 2 copies of each bronze card in your starting deck, set power to 25. Set power, which leads me to believe that it's base strength. Gulox, you already have an idea about Ciri Nova. You've already had some plans. I think there's a couple of ways you can take it. What was your take on this card?
I think you're going to see... First off, I think you're going to see a lot of people trying it out as soon as they get it. Mm-hmm. Because it's just such an interesting card. You know, the artwork's great, so that always helps. But I'm definitely going to try out. I've got some ideas to pair it with another one of the new cards that we saw yesterday for some quite powerful, just maybe sort of a brute strength Skellige sort of deck. With deck building, there's a lot of different ways you can go with this. I mean, you can Royal Decree into Ciri, Pulling Roach. You've got a 29.1 card opener. That's going to be sort of interesting to see how people would deal with something like that. Well, maybe it means we see a lot more Igni and a lot more Scorch. But, I am very excited for this card. I think there's a lot of possibilities with it.
Yeah. I mean, right away, I feel like there could be a consume list that runs this, because sometimes I feel like with consume, there's so many consume cards out there, it's hard to fit them all in. Sometimes you just choose to maybe not run Vrans or not run Necker Warriors and stuff like that, but maybe you can get away with kind of putting in the whole consume catalog and just doing the two ofs instead. That's probably where I'm going to go, which might be maybe not the best route, but I'm going to give it a shot. But it's interesting. Yeah, this card is a really interesting kind of deck building screen superstar. And I also think that Scorch should be a popular card at the beginning of any meta, because people try to get all sorts of like big crazy stuff going on, and it can just really shut them down. One more thing I want to say about Siri Nova before we move on to the monsters cards is, while I understand people's concerns and arguments for the new leaders, and I've seen some stuff on Reddit that really makes me upset, and that stuff that calls into question the design, like saying stuff like poor design or lazy design. And I think that is just not fair when you have some of the best design cards in Gwent being released alongside of these leaders, and people are really focusing on the negative. I think that Siri Nova and, of course, Vandergrift and Shylard are so well designed and really, really interesting cards. Trial of the Grasses as well, I think, is a very interesting card. So to say stuff like lazy design up next to these cards, I just think that's really not fair. And like these cards are there. There's a lot of interesting stuff that they're doing with the realm of just what number is this card going to represent? Like the stuff that they're doing with these cards is really something. So that's just my piece on that. I don't want to hear anything about lazy design in my communities, at least. No one ever want to hear that term if I can avoid it.
Leave it to the internet to just find the most negative thing and rip on it. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like that just guts me when I see that, especially about this game. So,
yeah.
Like the word lazy, like, ugh, it just makes me like people with no design experience are the people that are saying this stuff too. So, anyway, let's talk about the new monsters card. So, we got to see one bronze, one silver, and some golds, I think, for all the factions. So this one's kind of a throwaway card. So Back to Kill, I'm going to give you two, because the Siren is 4-strength bronze unit that summons Moonlight. We don't know what Moonlight does altogether. So, I mean, your evaluation of this card is not really expected to be anything outside of, well, we'll wait and see what Moonlight does. But it's probably going to be like Wild Hunt Hound for Frost. So, I mean, I'll just take this card and say that's probably what it's going to feel like. You play it like you play Wild Hunt Hound, and you use Moonlight cards like Werewolves, I imagine. But I'll give you Goliath Back to Kill. So Goliath, 10-strength silver unit, boost self by 6. So you play it as a 16. Whenever this unit is damaged, deal 2 damage to self. So he kind of has like an amplified damage on him. How do you feel about Goliath and kind of its applications?
At first sight, I was thinking, okay, might not be too good. But if you compare it to cards like Crones, just for a good tempo play, opening rounds with it, or just use it as a finisher with, let's say, ADC or something, then I can see it being really good. Especially it's going to be an 18 strength play, and it's your last play in this round, or even your first play, and your opponent has to catch up. And this can force someone into a really bad position. I think overall this card looks really, really good. Maybe it's going to see some tweakings from the numbers, the base number or something after a few times when everyone is running it as an opener or finisher. But overall, I think it's a perfect addition, especially, everyone played the game, I guess, or most of us. And everyone is familiar with those cards. This makes this card even more special if you have a card you're known to.
Mm-hmm. No, and I agree. I think that this card has just a really cool like design standpoint, like how it can be. It's a big strength unit, but it's better and better the later you play it because he's less susceptible to getting beat up. I really like that. And I think that kind of is a greater discussion about cards being always competitive. I think that we're coming from a world where the Gwent designers said that, you know, they want all cards to be roughly equal in value. They don't want to have quote unquote bad cards necessarily. But sometimes some mechanics just will never really be that competitive, even if they're interesting. And I think that Goliath, a lot of people don't think that Goliath is going to be great because but I think that it's more of a finisher card. It's definitely a late game card, but I think that it would not have to change at all. I think it's fine if it stayed like this, because it's okay to have cards like this now that we're going to see cards that are out there that'll source maybe cards that aren't always played, much like Discover / Spawn mechanics tend to do. We'll skip past Whispering Hillock here because we already kind of talked about her. And that would do it for the monster cards, because Siren's kind of up in the air, so there's not a lot to talk about. So let's go into Nilfgaard next. Oh, what's
up? Did we do Ruin?
Oh, was that... thanks, man. We did skip. I skipped it completely. All right, the thrilling. I'll send this one to you. So the Ruin, aka Dennis Cranmer for Insectoid and Cursed Units. It's cool, right? It's a little bit of archetype support, more to be seen.
Yeah, it's cool. I think it could be pretty strong in a consume deck where you have all those Arrakises coming out with the Arrakis Behemoths and all that kind of stuff going on. You can decoy him, kind of double bomb. I think it's just a very generally good inclusion in a monster's deck, especially if you're running consume. I'm excited to kind of see this curse tag in monsters. How many cards do we have like that in monsters right now? I don't think any, right?
I think the giant. I think Toad Prince. Yeah.
Toad Prince.
So just Toad Prince.
And the werewolves. Cool. Well, and the Strigoi.
Yeah, the werewolves coming in now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I like it. So I think we're going to see maybe some more cursed in monsters, which is a cool thing. I always like new stuff.
Yeah. No, like this new the new cursed archetype seems to be kind of spreading throughout all the monsters, Northern Realms, and Skellige seem to be people with cursed units. Like soldiers seem to be in all factions now, and we're seeing beasts show up in different factions. So it seems like there's going to be kind of support for these cards overall. So thanks, A-, for letting me know that I almost sailed right past Ruin, which one more time, I think I didn't actually explain it for the audio listeners. An 8 strength monsters unit, silver, strengthen all your insectoid and cursed units by 1 wherever they are. So not just cursed, though, a little bit insectoid stuff. So if you like to run your Arrakis Behemoths and such. So again, could be maybe a good consume addition. I don't know if it's... I imagine that whatever they release, it's going to have support. You're going to probably include it to whatever deck it's built around.
I feel like this could have been the leader. Like,
I've read that.
This ability could have just been the leader.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have been like more suited to a leader rather than a card. And then swap that with Whispering Hillock ability.
I think that's probably something that I've read the most about Whispering Hillock. Is that Ruin's effect feels much more like a leader ability, whereas Whispering Hillock's effect feels more like a potentially like a silver card with maybe a different base on top of it. So yeah, you'd maybe just tweak some of the base numbers and you could make the swap. Other people have also argued that Bruis Ritual could have been the leader as well, which is the 1 strength gold card, resurrect 2 bronze Death Wish units as kind of a Death Wish archetype supporting leader. But that is not the case. That is just probably a Death Wish, a really good gold card for Death Wish, which is also fine. But I feel like these are kind of interesting leader-esque abilities that aren't on leaders. They're able for all monsters to use. But it wouldn't if they ever changed it, it wouldn't be the first time. We do know that Unseen Elder used to be the old K-Ran, so they're not opposed to making these tweaks to how leaders work and how units work. So it's interesting to see, and I definitely... I agree. I think that Whispering Hillock is just, it's striking a chord with people that it's just not, doesn't feel like leader material. And I'm going to say, not necessarily that I agree that these units can be swapped with Whispering Hillock, but I will say that Whispering Hillock is, I am underwhelmed by Whispering Hillock, less so by Ada, by Whispering Hillock. So A-, let's actually talk about a card with you. Slave Hunter will be the Nilfgaard card that we're on here. Bronze 8 strength unit. Charm a bronze enemy with 3 power or less. Charm being a new keyword to represent effects like muzzle or treason. So it looks like they're planning on more cards like that. That's pretty cool, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I know some people have had differing opinions on muzzle currently. Mm-hmm. But so 8 strength, move a 3 or less. So it's bronze only. What, there's no real targets other than first play NECA that you'd want to really get, but then you can damage things and move them with damage. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I mean, it's a 14 power gold at max value, for bronze at max value, mm-hmm. which is pretty good. That's pretty average from what I've seen from these new cards anyway. They seem to have really creeped up in power a lot. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't really say you would use it more for the charm. You'd more use it just for the power output. I wouldn't think there'd be too many cards that you could really steal and really impact someone's game plan. Yeah, I think it's an alright card. It's pretty good base value, so yeah, I think it's good.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you would. I think that Slave Hunter can be used two different ways. I think you could probably take it along with a spy deck and grab emissaries if that was your thing. Although I don't know if that's great because usually you benefit from having the spies on your side of the or on the opponent's side of the board. But then there's another option where it's running with like the Black Infantry Arbalest and is kind of working with that soldier archetype and weakening units for stealing. So you kind of you hunt them down, you shoot them with the crossbow, and then you run after them and you take them. And I like that idea a lot. I also like the idea of like taking big cards like stuff like Vanimar, like Gremist or something like that. Or, you know, like it's really good low strength cards that, you know, maybe couldn't be replayed later. Because we're seeing
bronze
some
only.
Bronze only. Forget what I said. Yeah. Forget what I said about that. But what I said, or let's just cut it right where I had that cool thing about the Arbalest. But I think that, yeah, you can use it with spies and you can use it with damage, I think. But a soldier archetype could come together, and we see a silver card that was also revealed for Nilfgaard, Vreemd, if that's how you'd pronounce that. 4-strength officer, silver unit for Nilfgaard. Spawn a bronze Nilfgaardian soldier. So once again, a choice of 3 bronze Nilfgaardian soldiers will appear, and you can take your pick. So these new cards like Slave Driver and Slave Hunter, these would all be potential options for Vreemd. Gulox, how do you feel about Vreemd?
Well, I mean, it certainly seems as if they're trying to make this soldier deck much more viable. I mean, you already sort of see it a little bit right now on the ladder with people using a somewhat of a soldier package in the everyone's favorite mill with Morvran that I've been seeing more and more right now. Hmm. I mean, but Nilfgaardian Standard Bearers aren't that bad with multiple copies on the board, and I guess if you get a 4th one, you're certainly boosting a lot more. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting card. I mean, you obviously got to look at the entire, I guess, platoon of Nilfgaardian soldiers that you're gonna pick from. But yeah, I think it could. It's obviously a big help for that archetype.
Yeah, I look at a card like this and think it's probably going to be pretty good because much like Winch. When we talk about how Catapult's a bad machine, but you'd never pick it. So in the situation with Vreemd, the 2 worst options that you would ever think of, you would never pick anyway. So when you kind of mulligan away 2 options that you would have no use for, now what does the pool look like? The pool probably looks pretty good. Like if you have a situation to use Slave Hunter, you don't have to necessarily run Slave Hunter. You could just kind of go ahead and run Vreemd and maybe get a really good Slave Hunter opportunity, but otherwise just play something else. I think that Vreemd would make soldier decks a lot more kind of dynamic and interesting. And I think, like I said at the top of the podcast, he walks a line as to what could be considered competitive, but also RNG-like. But I think it's probably okay just because it's very restricted in its pool. It's going to be a Bronze Nilfgaardian soldier. I don't think that anybody was really worried about Winch being too good. But I would say that when you compare Winch, which is a bronze card, gives you a bonus of 2, to Vreemd as a silver card, which gives you a bonus of 4, yeah. The disparity seems like really close. I think that Winch is probably on the strong side.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Definitely.
And then the next card that was revealed was Nilfgaard's new gold card, Shylard from Witcher 2. I am so happy to see more Witcher 2 love coming in a lot. I love Witcher 2. I've played it twice now, and I would play it again, honestly, in dark mode or something like that. But Shylard is in there. 9-strength gold unit for Nilfgaard. Truce, which is a new keyword that replaces the if both players have not passed yet, I think, is what it's supposed to be. Truce. Draw a card from both decks. Keep one and give the other to your opponent. Before I pass this one to you back to Kill, I just want to compliment the design. Once again, when we're talking about the design here, like this is one of the best designs. It's so Nilfgaard. It's so flavorfully Nilfgaard in that you get information. You get to like kind of mess with your opponent's strategy. You get a tactical decision as to what you keep and what you play, and it's incredibly unique. So I just absolutely love this card, but the potential of this card, I'm not quite sure what that's going to look like yet. Back to Kill. How strong do you think Shylard is going to be?
First, I just wanted to say the art of this card is brilliant. What is probably my newest favorite card art in the game. When they showed the premium version on stream, it was brilliant. It was better than Vigeforce before. And the strength of this card, I see it has a huge potential, especially with deck manipulation with Xarthesius or Skellen. Stefan putting cards on top of your deck, maybe have something shuffled back or put especially in a worse card into your deck because you know you play with this one and give this card over to your opponent. Maybe the Mahakam Ale stuff or the Silver Ale, which is denying some cards from your opponent. Maybe you can play around with that, but I think overall this card is probably my most liked one from all shown so far.
Oh man, is this like the grossest, like stupidest idea for a combo where you run Johnny and you plan like Stefan Skellen and you plan to give your opponent ale and then you have Johnny ready to like to ditch the ale for an extra card? Like, is that's way too much setup, but it's kind of sounds like a funny thing that I'd like to try.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, but I like the card, and the scene, of course, depicted. I mean, slight spoilers for those of you who haven't played Witcher 2. This scene is at the right at the beginning of Act 3. Triss has just been decompressed by Asira Varanahid, and Shylard is done with her. And it's just cold, emotionless Shylard. The guy, it's just so easy to hate this dude throughout the entire story of Witcher. He's kind of a coward, and he's just stone cold asshole. Shylard. So, really cool. Or Shillard. I'm not sure. I've always said Shylard. I'm not really sure if that's right. Let's move into Northern Realms now. So, more support for the Cursed archetype, and we saw some really cool cards. Really cool cards for Northern Realms. All of them kind of fit the Cursed archetype. We'll start off with the Cursed Knight. A Cursed Soldier from Edirn, 8 strength bronze unit. Transform a Cursed ally into a copy of this unit, and it has 2 armor to go with it. The thrilling, are you excited for the Cursed archetype of Northern Realms? And do you think this card's going to be core?
You know, I, as a strictly Squirtle player, I am currently most excited for the release of Cursed Northern Realms cards because I don't play Northern Realms at all. Mm-hmm. So I think this inclusion, along with the mages, is really, really cool. It's definitely kind of a different flavor for Northern Realms, so I'm really excited to see that. So yeah, I'm very excited for Cursed. Sorry, what was the rest of the question? I got just like too hyped for Cursed.
Oh no, that's fine. That's exactly the kind of answer I wanted. But do you think that this card is going to be worth worth running 3 of? Do you think that there's going to be a lot of opportunities to use it? I guess we need to see most of the bronze cards, but it seems like it would work really well with these mages.
I agree. I think it's going to work really well with the mages. I'm excited to see what other Cursed bronze come out, but I think it's just a solid. It's a solid 8 strength bronze, so I mean it could be muzzled, but I'm excited to see everything else and kind of how it will work with this whole Cursed archetype. But overall, super stoked on Cursed for NR.
Yeah, me too. Actually, I hope that it's competitive enough, but I'm sure that the thing about archetypes sometimes is that you look at maybe like what a core set could be, like you look at all the bronzes and you look at all the silvers, like okay, so all these cards are supposed to go together, put them together and see how it works. But mm-hmm. but the extra deck building stuff comes from okay, how can I make most of this core work while kind of exploiting the most powerful parts of Northern Realms, and can I kind of slot that in and make sort of like what ends up being maybe a Cursed hybrid? Like I think that stuff like Movement Squirtle, you don't run every single movement card in Movement Squirtle that's really strong, but you run a good amount of them. So I wonder how purely Cursed Northern Realms will end up looking on the competitive side.
But well, the artwork is fantastic for Cursed. I'm just going to add that. So
it's a nice departure from kind of the soldiers in armor look that Northern Realms has
really
been owning.
It really is.
They really a nice departure. And going along with that, we saw the addition to the Cursed Officers from The Witcher 2. If you played Act 2 of The Witcher 2, you're very familiar with cards like Selkirk. And now also revealed Vandergrift, who I actually thought could have been a leader for Northern Realms because we hadn't heard about Vandergrift and we saw Selkirk. Now, we do know that Vandergrift is Draug. It is the same character, but Vandergrift here in his human form as he is standing underneath a meteor shower in probably one of my favorite cards ever revealed, I think. It's just got so much going for it. This card is on par with something like maybe Woodland Spirit and power level, maybe possibly better. 7 strength gold unit, damage all enemies by 1. If a unit is destroyed, apply Ragnarok to its row. A-, are you hyped for Vandergrift?
I'm hyped to play it. I wouldn't say I'm hyped to play against it.
Yeah.
yeah, it's an odd one because like you can drop this. It's so versatile because you can drop this sort of like right at the end of a round and hit for like. I guess with the new row limit, then they're gonna have some limitations to this card, but you can play it right at the end and you're gonna hit for like a truck and it's gonna be a huge tempo swing. But do you want to play it for the Ragnarok? So you just take the first opportunity you can to apply the Ragnarok, because Woodland Spirit is sort of like the most similar card to this card, right?
That's
and true. Then, but that is an instant. You get the three value on your board, so but this is on their board, so it's more conditional, but it's two more strength and has the potential to be pretty much insane. Mm. Like, I think this card is going to be almost as good as the Northern Realms cards that we have at the moment with like Shani and Natalis. And yeah, I definitely going to be playing this card when it comes out.
Yeah, I mean, the idea, like you're talking about playing it late for a huge bomb, but I think that, you know, with the weather effect, you want that to be ticking a little bit, I guess. So I feel like it seems like there's no really bad time to play Vandergrift. Obviously, you don't play it like a first card, but you can play a mid-round and actually still get a ton of extra value from him. So I think that he doesn't need a lot of time to kind of mature as far as like conditionally getting the best value you can get. And I think that how much value you can get out of Vandergrift is always going to be different. And I think that's really interesting. But I also think that cards like Ballista and cards like Reinforced Ballista, and of course, to a lesser extent, any machine that does damage, but I feel like the controllable aspect of the Reinforced Ballista is more likely to create ones on your opponent's board. So I think that you'd probably be okay running a machine deck around this guy, not necessarily a curse deck. You wouldn't have to. I think there's just so many applications, like Woodland Spirit, you see it in all sorts of monster lists. So I think you'd see Vandergrift in all sorts of monster lists. And then there's Ada that was also revealed for Northern Realms, which is the leader, six strength leader, spawn a bronze or silver cursed unit. We have talked about Ada at the top of the show, but I just want to say, I think that this card has such a high mathematical potential that you probably could get away with playing Ada and not worry about the RNG as much as you'd worry about it with Whispering Hillock. Because you're probably just going to get like two bodies and like, you know, some of them are not great. Like maybe you don't want the spy or maybe you don't want Iris or something like that. So you just don't pick those, but you could have the opportunity. You could end up, I don't know if there's three bad choices that you could ever look at where Ada wouldn't just be like a pretty good card at any given time. Gulox, I mean, what do you think about that, with Ada?
Yeah, no, I think she's going to be a pretty good leader. I think, I mean, with the wide expansion of cursed units in the game, there's going to be a lot of good things for her to pick from, definitely. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I also don't play Northern Realms as much as a certain other faction, but this cursed tag in Northern Realms certainly has me interested in trying it out a lot more. And I think this leader is a big part of it.
Yeah, but also it's important to you because you get to play Skellige while you're playing Northern Realms. So
exactly.
Just take Skellige right with you, right?
I can take the bears wherever I go.
Yeah. There's Ada for you. Let's move into the Scoia'tael cards now. We have Elven Scout, a two-strength bronze card. Spawn a bronze Scoia'tael unit that is not in your starting deck. I'm not crazy about this card because I feel like if I really wanted a card in my deck, I would just put it there. I don't know, back to Kill, how do you feel about Elven Scout?
Yeah, that was my first impression as well. Like building a deck with complete garbage cards and putting in three of the Evans cards just to get good cards. But in first place, maybe they add some more better Scoia'tael units. So you think, okay, this card can pull me even more since you're limited to 15 cards. You don't want to go into 30 or 40 cards. You want to make it consistent, and maybe it has some good potential. You can leave out something like two bad ones and a good one, and it will always show you the possibility of three with the spawn ability. So maybe it has some ways to play, but it's only a two strength body. So I think it's rather bad than good so far.
One thing I do like about this card is that it does produce two bodies. So if you're playing a beard deck, it's probably a little bit easier for you to kind of get that multiple row situation. The other thing I kind of like about this card is that since I'm probably not going to run Panther in my deck, like the four strength unit that deals seven damage to an enemy on a row with less than three units, I probably wouldn't mind choosing the Panther from Elven Scout if I needed to remove something. But it's always like, if I need it, it's so bad, wouldn't I just put it in my deck? So I have mixed opinions about Elven Scout, but I do like cards that produce two bodies. Half-Elf Hunter also being one of those cards. But now is a good time to let you guys know that I'm changing the name of the podcast to the Mahakam Horn Podcast, no longer Commander's Horn. We finished with that. Going to start a new Patreon. No longer your commandos, you are now dwarves, etc., etc. All the jokes. Mahakam Horn, new silver special card released for Scoia'tael. It is also an item card as well, which makes me wonder, is Commander's Horn also going to be changed to an item card? Will it be an item and a tactic? Will Natalis still be able to play Commander's Horn? So many questions. But Mahakam Horn here, choose one, spawn a bronze or silver dwarf, or strengthen unit by 7. The thrilling, being a Scoia'tael player, are you excited about this new special card, Mahakam Horn?
Meh.
Yeah, meh?
Being a Scoia'tael player, I'm obsessed with elves. I don't really play dwarfs that much. I feel like this would be really strong in a dwarf deck, especially if you need to, obviously, create another dwarven body. Good for the bombs, maybe kind of in the Marauder decks. But actually, you know what? This could work really well in my movement deck I have right now, because Melaina, which I've been using, is kind of underpowered, very easy target. So this would kind of be like a glorified swallow potion in decks that I create. So I guess, I mean, it's okay. It's not the greatest thing ever. It is a silver, so it's going to take up one of those slots. But yeah, that's just, I don't know. It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. I think that it's got a fail-safe in that it has two options. One of them is probably going to be very useful for you. The only way one of the ways I see this working best, I think, is you really kind of invest in a lot of strengthening effects, and you play a card like Milva to bounce up like a giant like Mahakam Defender that you maybe have buffed up, and you can have an easier time doing that with the horn. And then play it at a high base strength and maybe make extra use out of Xavier Moran, which benefits from boosting of or playing the base power dwarves. So I think there's something there. I think the Mahakam Horn probably has enough utility to it in that it's spawn, though, a bronze or silver dwarf. So you don't even know what you're going to get. You can get Yarpin, you can get a defender, a guard. So it's not reliable. It's not based on your deck. It's kind of just based on overall dwarves. So it's kind of like the Elven Hunter, the Elven Scout, in that it's giving you something that you're probably not running necessarily, but it could also do the strengthening as well. So I think it's kind of a we'll see a little bit for me. I want to see more about dwarves. But dwarves get one hell of a good card coming up. Polly Dahlberg, Dwarven Support, 4-strength silver card, resurrect a non-support bronze dwarf. This is probably the best card that Scoia'tael has seen right now, and maybe one of the most competitive. A-, do you agree?
I think it's it has so much potential, mm-hmm. and I think it could be really good. I wouldn't really see many things in the current card pool, though. Like, what do we have as a non-support? So we have like the carryover ones, the guards. Mm-hmm.
The guards, yeah. The mercenaries, are they support?
Mercenaries, yeah. Mercenaries are not supports.
I guess skirmishers also wouldn't be either.
Yeah. So. In movement, that could be really good as a if you don't have any movement left. Mm-hmm. The combo I was thinking of was if you had sort of like a huge carryover that's strengthened, and then you play it like sort of Skellige, where you just drop it round 3 and then res this huge strengthened dude. Mm-hmm. But I think it's got mixed. I think I have mixed opinions on it because I don't feel like this is what the dwarf archetype really feels like. At the moment, I think they're trying definitely to change the path sort of how dwarves are going to work in the future. But yeah, I think I'd have to see some more dwarf cards in the new reveals to actually have a better opinion on this one, because there are some other combos where, like, as I said before, if you just drop a big dwarf at the end and then play Xavier Moran after that, then does that count as the big dude as well? So you could double the strength of that.
Yeah, interesting. I actually wonder if that's true.
But yeah, I think it's a really good card. Like, resurrecting pretty much... The resurrect mechanic is pretty much just, like, super good. And if you can play a deck that you can replay it a certain mechanic twice, then it's always going to be good. So yeah, I like it.
I think played might be played from hand, but it's interesting because then there's Jade Figure... There's Whoa, what am I looking at? What's the summoning circle that is, it grabs like the last thing that hit the board. So there's been some wording changes, so it is kind of up in the air right now. But I think that Polly Dahlberg, like resurrecting stuff like the Skirmisher, which strengthens itself whenever it meets its condition. So then you bring it out in its strengthened form to then hit again, is probably like one way to use it on a very basic level. But I think that bringing back gigantic units, I mean, he feels a little bit like kind of like how Sigurd Rifa feels like when you play her to just res some gigantic unit in Skellige. And I think that it's a very Skellige-like, like this one and Hattori, very interesting how like Resurrection is kind of coming into Scoia'tael. So, you know, Gulox, you're getting a little bit of Skellige in all sorts of different factions spreading out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So now we're in the Skellige section, so I'm sure you've been waiting for these. We're going to talk about the Clan Protector. This is the really cool item tutor that Skellige received. Clan Protector, Heimei Soldier, 2-strength bronze card. Play a bronze item from your deck. And we've only seen 2 bronze items so far in Spear and Wyvern Shield, I believe. But I'm sure some might be retroactively become items or something like that. But I think that we're going to have to see how good the items are. How do you feel about this card here, Gulox?
Well, actually, I was just looking at a Bone Talisman as an item as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great.
There's definitely perhaps a utility there. I think a lot of it is going to depend on what sort of items or what sort of things we already have become items in relation to how they're going to work with the deck. But, you know, anything, I mean, Skellige, anything for Skellige that can help me get more cards out of the deck, I am generally a fan of. That's usually been, other than discard, I mean, it can be pretty hard to do that. So this is a card I'm definitely going to check out once I get a more complete idea of what the item pool is and how they can interact with the other ideas I have for some Skellige stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a good card. I think it can find some use, definitely.
I have a feeling we're going to see a card, either bronze or silver, that has some sort of boosting effect whenever an item is played, just to give a little bit more of a core piece, I think, for the items for Skellige. Because, yeah, Bone Talisman is a great item. Resurrect a bronze beast or heal an ally and strengthen it by 3. So, right. You know, there's a lot of use there. You're just running those cards by themselves. But it's kind of like Herbalist right now, where you're going to have, you know, some applications for it, but won't be seen in every Skellige deck. So I think that this is going to be probably just maybe like a flexibility choice, perhaps. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
There is too much to be seen still. It's possible that Skellige gets, there could be more bronze special cards that are faction based, right. And items might be Skellige's thing.
Yeah, very true. And the fact that it's not a random item like Herbalist is, mm-hmm. in relation to organics is very nice indeed.
Yeah.
It lets you have a wider selection of things you can use, and you're not just like, well, I'm just going to play Marjoram because I can't have my Herbalist drawing the Lacerate when I don't need it. So I like that a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And then we got a silver card here with great artwork, by the way, because Moonlight CDPR is pictured in the back of this card art. This is the giant boar, a beast for Skellige, who is apparently going to get some beast support. So that's very interesting. We got the giant boar, 7-strength silver card, destroy a random ally and then boost self by 10. Back to kill once again. I'm giving you a card that I'm not crazy about here. How do you feel about giant boar? I don't know if it has a good enough amount of value to it.
Yes, that's exactly the problem here. We have, at best, let's say, a 16-strength silver, since you have to destroy something, which is at least 1 strength. If you have carryover with Morgvark and you drop it on a board, it's at least okay-ish. But you have other silvers in Skellige, which are really oppressive when it comes down to high-strength play. And let's say Jenge. Jenge already, you hit 2 units, and he's a 16-strength buddy. And then you can use Armor Smith on it. The next problem here is that it's boosted only. So it's easily denied afterwards. I think it's not a good card. Not with those numbers. And especially with the RNG effect killing 1 unit, 1 random unit. So you have to play carefully around it with, let's say, carryover.
Yeah, like you need to construct these perfect situations where you're always playing it on a board with a 1 on it and only a 1. And that's like, that's unrealistic, right? Because a Freya is going to res something, you know, the Heimei Soldier is going to pull something. Like, there's not just going to be 1 small unit on it unless you're playing a Herbalist, in which case, why are you playing it at the very beginning of a round? So it's It doesn't seem like it's going to be very good, even though beasts are seeing some support with Skellige. The last card we're going to be talking about today is Olaf, and that's a big card for sure. It is a cursed beast, a gold unit for Skellige, 20 strength, deal 10 damage to self, but reduce the damage inflicted by 2 for each beast you played this match. So this opens up, you only need to play 5 if you want to play Olaf once to get a full 20 points out of it. So it's not demanding too much for you. But, I mean, this is going to be, like, do we see a full-on bear deck coming from Skellige? I think that's pretty cool thematically. The thrilling, what do you think about Olaf when you take a look at this giant, majestic creature?
That's exactly what I think. I'm like, wow, that is a giant, majestic 20-point gold card. With a nice Geralt back muscle in the foreground. I'm just going to note that. But I am going to pass this to Gulox because I know he loves his bears and his Skellige, so I'm going to let him talk about this one.
Cool, yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, in that Surinova deck that I was talking about earlier, Olaf is my round 3 play. That's the plan, at least. It gives you enough time to play your beasts, get them out at a nice 20, or even if you want to be a little... have a little fun and get him out at 18 and then throw a war crier on him. I think he's going to be a lot of fun. I think he's another card that I think when people get him, they want to try him out just to see how it, maybe even just how it feels to throw a 20-point card on the board and just see what happens. There's beast synergy, there's cursed synergy. So he could find a place in a couple of different Skellige decks, and I would also imagine that if you're playing a hypothetical draft mode, you wouldn't turn down a 20-point gold either. So I think he's going to be pretty good, and it serves him well, as he was the champion of Skellige fighting. So
it wasn't champion of champions. I thought champion of champions
was the champion of all, everything.
Oh, of all fights.
Olaf was the champion of Skellige.
Oh, cool. Okay. Right. I never did all the... I didn't do the fist fighting side quests when I played Witcher 3. So I know that is what he is. And
Fighting a bear, I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Tons of fun.
Yeah. I mean, Geralt's making it look pretty easy. He's like, come at me, bro. No problem. So A-, just because I want to make sure we get the entire round the table here, I'm going to say, out of all the new cards that you've seen so far outside of, well, actually including the ones that we just talked about, which one so far has kind of been your favorite? You can say for any reason whatsoever, artwork, competitive viability, or just coolness. What do you think, A-?
That's a hard choice right there. Letho Kingslayer I'm going to go for. I think Letho Kingslayer has so much potential in... competitive play, the destroying a leader so you can destroy things like Unseen Elder to, I don't know, it just seems very unique, and I really like that about it. Yeah, so yeah, I think I'd go for Letho Kingslayer.
I think Letho Kingslayer is like one of the best targets for Trial of the Grass, is if you're using him to play tactics more often. So you have like the lowest strength witcher that can get the biggest boost, I think. Like, he is the lowest strength witcher in the game right now. When you play him without his boost. So it's possible that you would even consider doing that with Letho Kingslayer. But yeah, Letho Kingslayer is a cool one for sure. Just around the table, quick bullet points. If you had to pick an archetype to hit the ladder with on day one of the patch right now, based on what you've seen, what would be the archetype you would go for first? Back to kill.
Seeing some good monster cards, I would probably say Relict. With Weaver's Incantation, buffing everything, and having Striga as well, which is supported. I think overall, Beast, I would pick it and run it immediately.
Right on. The Thrilling, what do you have your
Beast
eye on?
Beast Relict.
I'm going to have to say Cursed Northern Realms. It just looks so cool, especially with Keon, Selkirk, and Vandergrift. I just think that kind of new aspect of Northern Realms really interests me, and I'm stoked to play that.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same boat. I think it's between that or maybe Soldier and Ilfgaard, perhaps. A-, what do you think?
Oh, I'm going with some meme plays. We're going to go... We're definitely doing the Saskia Dragonfire. I've got a cool idea with Saskia. Because the Surinova means that you're sort of cutting your thinning and musters. If I play Siri Nova with Saskia Dragonfire, it sort of makes up for that thinning potential.
Mm-hmm.
And then add some, yeah, add some extra things in there. So yeah, that's what I'm going for.
And Gulax, you're going for Bear Skellige, that's right?
Yeah, I think probably Bear Skellige, although that Haim is looking very nice as well. And so there may be some cursed applications as well with that Urden card that everyone seemed to think was going to be way too powerful and no one is talking about anymore based on everything that we just saw yesterday. So that'll be fun.
Oh, I think Urden's still super scary and will scare me until the day I have no reason to be scared of it, I think. Until it becomes clear that like either no one is playing it or it's not that good, I'm terrified of that card anyway. But we'll see how it pans out. The last thing I want to go around the table and discuss before we take some questions from the chat is Gwent Challenger number 2. It is coming up very soon, December 16th and 17th. The weekend fast approaches. It is next weekend. We are going to see one hell of an event, I can tell you for sure. And there's a lot of stuff to be excited about. But I'm gonna put four questions out there to the round table. Back to Kill. I'm gonna hit you with more of a competitive question, I think. I have two questions, I guess. One maybe is easy to answer. Are you excited to see Life Coach compete again? It's been a long time since the champ has been in the spotlight. And the second thing is, what deck do you think is going to show up and do very well in Challenger?
First question, obviously, yes. Really excited to see Life Coach again, especially if you kind of follow Super JJ stream. He's always talking about him practicing in the background. He's probably playing at least 10 to 12 hours Gwent a day with Life Coach training for the Gwent Challenger. And for decks, I would really, really like to see, let's say, Squirtle blowing up, especially when Juha pulled it, as I think he was the only one at the last Gwent Slam, playing it and winning the tournament and forcing even a ban on it because it ran double code weather. Maybe something like that, or even pulling out a Skirmisher, which we saw it kind of often on the ladder today in the last few days. I really hope Squirtle will be the number one faction played next week.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see the representation of classes and leaders and stuff like that, because I think that like Northern Realms is such a cool faction right now because you're seeing all three of them. And Squirtle, for some reason, even though movement Squirtle I think is very strong, I think it's just really like they are a little bit more binary in that they run gold weather or they're like highly susceptible to scorches and things like that. So all of the good decks have like the sort of counter to it. I'm not sure if that's necessarily why it's seeing less of a representation or if it's just identified that the other decks are just that much better. But after Unseen Elders showing at Gwent Slam, I think that monsters are kind of on shaky ground competitively. So it's really interesting to see what people are going to bring. Earlier this week on Wednesday, I had a great experience. I was able to play Gwent with the hosts of Challenger, Matthew Mercer and Marisha Ray. They will be hosting Challenger there on Critical Role on Geek and Sundry. And of course, they are really cool people as well, voice actors. Matthew Mercer is McCree's voice actor from Overwatch. So it's really cool to have them involved with Challenger. And I was part of the stream, as well as Mogwai and Merchant, Swim and Panda all had their own segments to teach Gwent to gamers that have not really spent a lot of time with Gwent. The Thrilling, did you catch the stream? Did you get to see the casters put it together? And what did you think about that sort of educational experience, if you caught it?
I unfortunately didn't catch the stream. It was right when I got to work, so I couldn't tune in. I caught a bit of Swims when CDPR was hosting it before the dev stream on Friday. It looked really cool, but I unfortunately didn't have the sound on, so I'm probably not the best person to answer this question, but I'm sure it was a fabulous experience.
Cool. Who did catch some of the streams?
No, I caught your stream with them. I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, they seemed to be very enthusiastic and wanting to learn the game. They seemed to be picking it up very quickly. So, and those games were a lot of fun. That what was that, like a 50-point play you had in that one card or something?
Yeah,
like
right.
That was crazy. But that was fun. That was good. That was good to sort of display the game with something super fun like that. So,
yeah. K here into 10 strength Roach into Nausicaa Brigade hitting Iris was not enough to even win that game.
Yeah.
Because I encouraged them and pushed them to 2-0 me. I'm like, try to 2-0 me, try it. That was one of the highlights, but I thought the games were really close. It's really, you get really close games when you're teaching somebody how to beat you. So it's really cool. I'll swing it back to the thrilling though. What about Challenger and this end of the season are you most excited about outside of learning about new cards, which I think everybody can agree is very exciting?
End of the season, what am I excited about for end of the season in Challenger? I mean, outside of the fact of the new cards, I think Challenger is going to be amazing to watch. There's going to be some amazing casters. There's going to be absolutely amazing decks, gameplay. So I think it's just going to be a feast for the eyes in terms of people who love to watch Gwent content like myself. But I think what I'm most excited about for the end of the year is kind of hopefully maybe getting some more Thronebreaker stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we will, but I know they moved it to 2018, which I am absolutely totally okay with because I fully trust CDPR. But I think for sure Thronebreaker.
Yeah, I mean, there is lots of stuff on
whatever
the horizon.
Whatever news.
Oh, sorry, you cut out.
Whatever news may come. It was just
For sure, yeah. There's going to be some announcements, and Challenger is a pretty big stage for it. So it's possible we get a whole bunch of new info from Challenger. So I think it's not going to just going to be the tournament. I can tell you that there's a lot of stuff planned for like the event to be sort of this whole experience. It's not just going to be here are the games, let's watch them play. Here are some more games, let's watch them play. There's going to be a lot more to it, and I know that the hosts are going to be part of it. We're all going to be part of it as well. The location is very interesting, so let's get excited about it. It's only a weekend from now.
One like more thing to add about that. I'm really excited about I love the Gwent community, and I'm super excited. When tournaments happen, everyone just comes together, and there's such a feeling of unity within the Gwent community. So I'm really excited for that feeling as well. At the end.
Yeah, I hope the community behaves themselves in Twitch chat.
Yeah.
Well, that's a steep statement.
Yeah, I just, you know, sometimes, you know, it is a great community, but Twitch tends to bring out the weird mutated aspect of it, I think, in all games. So hopefully everybody is kind and respectful to all of the players, all of the people involved with it, knowing that, you know, everybody's working hard, practicing, there's a lot on the line, there's a lot of pressure. And just, you know, it's okay just to relax and enjoy something. It doesn't always have to be about making fun of people all the time for no goddamn reason. Twitch chat, please.
Seriously.
Yeah, I think Gulox, I'm trying to think of something else to kind of talk about the Challenger aspect of it. But is there anything else that you want to talk about? Competitive play, how you feel about looking forward to Challenger and things that are on the horizon for Gwent? Any musings you have in your head about the future here?
I'm somewhat dismayed. I don't think I'm going to be able to watch much of Challenger since that's the I'm going on vacation and. It won't be the best situation for me to watch, but I'm definitely interested to see what happens there. I think the tournaments and the competitive scene are a lot of fun to watch, and you know, I personally use them to learn a lot. I try to see if I can emulate players that I know I'm pretty confident are better than me, what they do in relation to things, because I personally think it's a strange answer, perhaps, but I personally think they're a great educational tool for people to learn the game and for people to get better at the game, just to watch and to see how those that are the best do what they do in relation to the game. So that's my favorite aspect of the competitive scene in the tournaments, for sure.
Yeah, there's only so many opportunities to actually watch the best people play against the best people, and you can only kind of study things as much as you can. So every time there's a new event, it kind of opens up another facet of the meta and, like, you know, the best ways to play, unless it's Nilfgaard, in which case it hasn't changed. It's just it's there. Right? They've already arrived. Nilfgaard is just they got there. They got to their ultimate state, I think. But I would like the how are we doing for time, everybody? Can we do maybe like two or three questions from the chat? Right on. So tag me at McBearded so it just pops out on the Twitch chat. If you have any questions for any of our individual commandos or me, or about, you know, the revealed cards that we've seen, maybe something about Challenger that you're interested in talking about, or really anything at all, we're happy to chat about anything, and we'll see who wants to take those questions. But I will say, I think it's really cool. I think the narrative of Challenger for me is probably the most exciting thing, because you have Life Coach coming back. He's the champ. He won the first Challenger. But in the first Challenger, one the game was in a completely different state. Like, as different as it could be, this was before some of the biggest changes were made. This was before weather was even changed, let alone gold immunity, leaders being changed, you know, total archetypes being completely reworked. Like, right after Challenger, like, immediately following Challenger, we had public beta begin, where we saw just a slew of changes. So since then, we've gotten to know a lot of players on the competitive scene. We've got some mainstays like Game King, Freddy Babes. We know that both of those players are going to be, both of those players are going to be at Challenger. It's going to be Freddy Babes, Game King, Jorah, Shaggy, Life Coach, Coleman, Adzikov, and Tailbot. Those are your eight competitors. That was off the top of my head. I'm getting pretty good at that. Those are your eight competitors for well Challenger. Done. And Life Coach, seeing Life Coach kind of return to this world now, where in the first Challenger, we maybe didn't know all these people. We maybe knew some of the personalities like Trump or PPD or Noxious. And we maybe knew some of the other players due to like their work in Gwendolyn or the competitive scene like Pronio or Vishra. But now these players have real stories. We have gotten to know these players. We know the kind of decks they play. We know like their style of play. We know what they're not afraid of bringing to tournaments. We've gotten to know them. We've seen interviews with them. We've been following their competitive journey. It's going to be a very, very different experience. There's not so much promotion and fanfare and celebrity. It's just these are the best players, and they are now our own celebrities because time has actually passed and we've gotten to know them. So it feels like much more of a peer event. Challenger being a great kind of beginning to the natural boost of Gwent, but this event is kind of a culmination of all those things between Challengers, and I'm very, very excited for that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to see who sent some tagged questions here. Not too many. Remember, just tag me at McBearded. DracoHunter123, what are all of their favorite factions? Okay, well, anybody can go around the table right now. Back to Kill, what is your favorite faction?
Right now, Northern Realms.
Northern Realms, right on. Thrilling, judging by your shirt. Skoytel. She's wearing a Skoytel shirt for the audio only listeners. A-, what's your favorite faction?
So I have two. Monsters is my favorite faction to play because I just like monsters. But Skellige has to be my second favorite just because it's the most viable deck that I can actively play prize winning cow in.
Mm-hmm. Right on. Meme Lord right here. And Gulak Skellige, right?
Yeah. Sure. Skellige, yes.
For sure. Well, actually, not a lot of questions from the chat this time. So I guess I'm just happy to go. I guess now would be maybe a good time if anybody wants to follow you on any of the content that you're a part of. If you're a streamer or a YouTuber, article writer, if you tweet feverishly or participate in many Discords, where people can find you in the content you create, if you are a content creator. Back to Kill, where can people find you?
On Twitch, on Twitter, with X Back to Kill X.
Okay.
Sadly, the name was taken, so I have to take the X's.
You have to put the X's on the other side? Yeah, that happens sometimes. And the Thrilling, where can people find you when you're streaming, tweeting, etc.?
Twitch.tv/Thrilling, just regularly spelled Thrilling. I'm super stoked about that. And on the Twitterverse is @the_Thrilling.
Right on. And what about you, A-?
So my Twitch is twitch.tv/A_-. That underscore is hopefully going to be removed soon. And then my Twitter, I believe, is A_-, spelled out like it is now. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
Right on. And Gulaks, where can people find you?
Well, I'm sort of an older gentleman, and I never even really got on the Twitter bandwagon. So I'm really just on Twitch at the twitch.tv/gulaks2. So
right on. It's funny you say that because originally Twitter was used. The early adopters for Twitter were actually older. It wasn't necessarily like geared towards teenagers and 20-somethings. It was more so for executives and stuff to plan things out. And Twitch is actually a very young platform. So it's funny that you proposed it like that. Like Twitter was something you were lagging behind on, whereas Twitch is like kind of like the future in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So we got one more question from the chat before we close things out. Just one more question. If you could change Ada's ability, what would it be? So I guess this question is more for people who think that Ada, her random effect of spawning a bronze or silver cursed unit from the pool of all cursed units across all factions, what would that ability look like? My personal thought about it, and I don't know if this is balanced at all, but the idea could be spawn a copy of a cursed unit in your deck. So you look at three cursed units in your deck, and then you can play one of those cards as a copy of that card. But then I think there might be balancing issues over playing two strong silvers in a game necessarily. So maybe it could be just fine if you just play the cursed unit, in which case it's a pretty general leader in that case, but it still kind of works with the cursed archetype. I don't know. This question goes out to anybody who has had some thoughts about Ada, or maybe even Whispering Hillock as an extension of this question. How maybe you would prefer it to be rather than the way it is. I'll go around the horn one more time here. Back to Kill.
Two sides. Forever, probably something like Rune with buffing the cursed units. Like an overall global effect for the cards itself to make it obviously viable for the deck or for a specific archetype. And for the monster leader, probably some choices like giving X opportunity or something else. But right now with organic, I'm not sure. I would completely change it to something specific like Moonlight, added it to this faction and
I think a fixed amount of choices for Whispering Hillock might be fine, like how Aridin is and apparently remaining. The Thrilling, did you have any ideas of changing these leaders? But it sounds like you were okay with them.
I'm pretty okay with them. I have one question, though, and then I will answer. Do we know if Moonlight is going to be an organic card?
We don't. Well, we saw a leak of the card artwork, and I'm not sure, first of all, if it was even in English or if it showed a tag, but it's possible.
They showed it on stream. The artwork was on stream.
But it didn't have a tag.
So we don't know.
From what I was thought, didn't it say it was a hazard and a boon?
Yeah. It could be both, potentially.
Okay. So if Moonlight was, I feel like Moonlight should be an organic card and should be able to be spawned by Whispering Hillock. I feel like with all the inclusion of that kind of, those kind of units and monsters, that would be pretty cool. And I'd like to see that. In terms of Ada, I don't know if this would be super OP, but I would like to kind of see her have a similar, maybe not a mulligan effect, but kind of like a Francesca effect, where you can maybe look at certain cursed units from your deck, pick one, and either play it or put it into your hand.
Airball Shooter is kind of adding an addendum to the Kier's question here about changing abilities. The consideration that the monster leader has no limitation on bronze or silver, so you could actually pull gold organic cards, one of which being, not Trial of the Grasses, that is Alchemy, but Wolfsbane is a organic gold card. That's pretty crazy to think that you could do that. And it's not a bad idea, because playing Wolfsbane with a body attached to it is kind of what Bran is doing already. So it being always a possibility, but A-, do you think that that's, how do you feel about Whispering Hillock potentially pulling golds, and do you have any ideas about changing these leaders?
So I don't believe that Whispering Hillock should really pull golds. I think that's just a bit too stupid. I don't think anything really should pull golds as a tutor, other than stuff that's specific, like Royal Decree and stuff like that. And Royal Decree is like a 2-strength thing, and this is a 6-strength thing. So if it's that's pulling golds, then it's going to be a bit overtuned, I guess. Whispering Hillock, as I said earlier, I feel like it should just have Ruin's ability, where it strengthens. Is it strengthened or is it boost?
Ruin is strengthened, yeah.
Okay, so strengthen Insectoid and curse units in deck. That feels like a fine leader card to me. It fits a fact. It fits an archetype. It blends with the units you're using. In terms of Ada, I really like the what you said earlier about choose it from the deck rather than just spawn. Ada is definitely not my favorite. Like, as soon as I think about Ada, I just think about having two spies with Udaric, and it just, yeah, that didn't work well. That didn't work well before when one faction had two spies in. So, I don't really have any thoughts on it now, because I would have to think a lot more about it to actually like change it, but I would definitely change it to something different. Yeah,
I mean, it'd be interesting if Ada did actually spawn a copy of a card, but it was bronze only, because then she'd be kind of like the original Foltest, in that Foltest was able to create a copy of a unit. So it's kind of like thematically that like the daughter of Foltest could do something like that. But I think that,
yeah, that makes sense.
I think it's maybe the copy of the silver. Maybe if it was just spawn a copy of a gold bronze card in your, or bronze cursed unit in your deck. But maybe that's not good enough. It might not be good enough.
I think that would be pretty good with the cursed units we have now. Like, if I got a fourth cursed knight, I would be so happy.
Yeah,
the cursed knight seems so good.
I like the idea of cursed knight, just kind of a quickly off piece. I like the idea of cursed knight denying Iris.
Yeah.
Just completely shutting Iris down because it just, like, deletes her. Of course, most situation with Iris is that you have no time to interact with her. That's why she's very strong, because there's a lot of ways to do it. But it's kind of cool that you just have, like, Iris protection, because Iris is a card that has been bumming me out lately, I think. I'm just always sick of teching for Iris. Gulox, any last words on the new leaders before we wrap this up?
You know, actually, with Whispering Hillock, with Wolfsbane being the only gold organic at this time, I would have no problem with it pulling it. Because how is a monstrous player going to instantly get that into the graveyard? They're going to have to play it, and then it sits in there, I guess. I guess maybe it does go directly to the graveyard, because I don't think I've ever actually seen anyone actually just play it from hand. So maybe I don't know how that works. But I don't know. It's sort of a loss of tempo as well. So, I mean, I'm sort of in on it, but I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. In relation to Atta, I think it would be very cool if she was sort of like a Wild Hunt Longship, and sort of like Herald in a way, in relation to if she's played on the board, she gave like a consistent a buff to all cursed units on the board or something like that, like a plus two or something like that. To sort of, you know, place some importance into relation to, here's a leader on the board, it's doing something I need to get rid of, you know, making it a high priority card. So I think something like that might be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at it. I think for me, I think that the added change is one thing, but I also think that Whispering Hillock is generally that ability is not great for a leader. Like, it's just really hard for me to be on board with that being like anything that I would ever pick. Oxar in the channel, while I don't agree with the original part of what he said about bad design, I don't like, I said earlier during the show, bad design is not a criticism that I think is fair, but I will say that what he said is correct, where he says none of the organic cards have any synergistic timing. I would say few of them. They would all be played in different situations, and you play it and pray for something that you can actually make work. And I think that being on a leader is just not reliable. And I think that my biggest gripe is that we find they're getting new leaders, and that one isn't a very good one. So I think that's really the only thing that I would say about that. And I think it's good to wrap it up here. It's a pretty healthy podcast. We chatted for an hour and a half with the Commandos. And once again, we are supported by our Commandos. Our patrons at patreon.com/commandershorn recently posted a little note on the Patreon about Patreon's recent fee changes, because I do care about that kind of stuff. And it is important. So if you haven't been onto Patreon recently and you are a Commando, take a look at it. And let me know what you think about those changes from Patreon. And thanks so much for supporting the content either way. Of course, everybody's a Commando for life, however you make your decision. I think it really hurts the $1 pledges for those who get access to the Discord. So I wish it wasn't happening in that way, because I think that access to the Discord is one of the best things about being a Commando. So, but thank you very much for supporting our content, all the Commandos here and out there, for keeping the podcast ad-free and keeping the mics on. I think that's good. We'll wrap this up here. Find us on Twitter at Commanders Horn and email us at the podcast, commandershornpodcast@gmail.com. I myself can be found on Twitter at McBeardCH, on Twitter, McBearded on Twitch, where you are currently watching this episode, and McBeard on YouTube. I will be redoing my card reveals and posting them soon. That audio sync issue that I had the other day was actually completely ruined my video, so I have to re-record them, but they will be up, and I hope you can check them out soon. And I think that'll be good. Thanks very much to all the Commandos. Thank you to Back to Kill, The Thrilling, A-Minus, and Gulox. This is going to be it. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, this is McBeard for the Commandos. Best of luck on the path.